J-Tech Studios in Atlanta, Georgia. It's America's favorite game show podcast. Tell them what they've won. And now, here are your hosts, Tom Bastek and Mike Jacobs.
Hello and welcome in. It's America's favorite game show podcast. Tell them what they want. We're the game show guys. I'm Tom Bastek.
And I am Mike Jacobs. Tom, we are here at the 59th episode, even though I just realized our cue sheet still says 58. Whoops. But yeah, we are coming up on the 60th episode, the end of season three. Big deal.
I don't know. The way you said the end there, it was like the end.
And
I
no, not like, the end.
No! Of course not. Yeah, man. Season three coming to an end. Pretty excited about our big 60th show. Obviously, you know, the end of each season. Season one, we did... God, what did we do for season one? Oh, we did the really big show.
Oh, that's right. Yes. The really big show. Had, the big, yeah, big prize.
Every show that had the name big in it. There was like, I think we did six of them.
Which honestly, the only one I even remember was the one that I talked about where Errol Flynn goes on about boating trivia for like 30 minutes. It was a weird one. Anyways.
And then it was the end of season two where we did the video game show.
Indeed. That was a great one.
That was a great one. That was
where I declared best ending round of all time for Video Power.
Absolutely.
Indeed.
Absolutely. Only because you like sticking things to yourself with Velcro.
Yes. Well, I mean, the video game part of it I could take or leave. It's really the sticking stuff to myself with Velcro that you know.
You know, for a man who has a ball pit in his living room, you would think that you had a big Velcro wall and a trampoline somewhere to bounce into it.
Now that is a great idea. We're going to have to set that up.
Oh, Opal is going to be very upset with me.
Indeed.
All right. Well, do you want to give one more little tidbit of what we've got coming up for folks next week in our big 60th finale?
I figure at this point we've teased it enough and we got it coming up next. We might as well let them know so they can watch out for it. But
cool.
The big the big game show topic that we have not discussed yet is the Japanese game show phenomenon.
Yes.
Of course, we'll talk about the ones that made it to America, but really we want to focus on the weird stuff in Japan that we don't get here in America. You know, we're going across the pond, as they say, and we're gonna learn about the weird and wacky world of Japanese game shows.
And it's pretty weird and pretty wacky.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
We'll have to give Christian the heads up so he can do research because, you know, he's really good on the American side of things, but I don't know how much he knows on the Japanese side.
Well, he had mentioned that there are some American shows which have been turned into Japanese game shows where they take a turn to be more Japanese. And to be perfectly honest, those are the ones I'm most looking forward to because, like, I mean, you know, everybody's sort of familiar with the concept of the wacky Japanese game show. And don't get me wrong, it's going to be fun to learn about the specifics of those. But what I really want to see is what they do with American. Like, we see how things get Americanized all the time. I would love to see how they become Japanized.
Japanized?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a great, great. Japanese?
Yeah, there you go. Japanese.
All right, man. There it is.
It's well, not, but it feels a little racist saying that. It's weird.
It does. It does. It's a little cringy. It's a little cringy.
Yeah.
Well, that's coming up next week. That's our 60th show. We're pretty excited about it. It may actually be two because you're going on vacay for a little bit. So
yeah, indeed. I'm going to be hitting up the beach. Nothing like December beach time to call a vacation. But nobody else is going to be there.
Get out there and get some tan, bro, because you need it.
That's very true.
God, not as true as it is for me, man. Holy cow. All right. Well, this week we've got a great show that we're going to talk about, but I think we should first head out and let's talk to Christian and get some news.
Sounds great.
Light up your cigarette, crack open a beer, put the kiddos to bed. From chaos around the world to carnage in your very old front yard, it's time for the news.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Mike. This is the news brought to you by BuzzerBlog.com. Well, You Bet Your Life with Jay Leno, against all odds, has been renewed for a second season. I guess enough people watched this. Now, I haven't had a chance to see it, I'll be honest with you. because I'm not much of a Jay Leno fan. And it seems like the format of the show, which originally was like a sort of lighthearted kind of quiz thing, and you interview the contestants and have a lot of fun with them, but then kind of play the game secondary, just seemed like another vehicle for what Jay Leno has been doing on late night TV for years and years and years. Not much interest in it, but apparently there is interest in it because it's coming back for season two. No air dates yet, no casting yet, but congratulations to everybody who works on the show. Must be nice to have employment in these uncertain times, but yeah. You Bet Your Life with Jay Leno coming back.
I would have bet my life it wouldn't have made one season.
Well, honestly, I forgot that we even talked about this existing. And I kind of do want to see it just like a curiosity sake. Like, I'm not actually interested in it. And I agree with you, Christian, but I do want to see it in a weird way.
I saw a promo for it the other day and it looked terrible. Like, it did not make me want to watch it. It actually made me go, oh, that's why I don't want to watch it. Okay, great.
I have a feeling very quickly into the show I'm just gonna be like, oh yeah, no, I don't want to watch this, and turn it off. But again, like, my curiosity will eventually get the better of me, I'm sure.
Just a quick footnote on this. This is now the only version of You Bet Your Life since the original one with Groucho Marx to last more than one season.
Wow.
Hey, so, good on Leno for that.
Like, Buddy Hackett tried it in the 80s, lasted one season. Bill Cosby in the 90s, one season. Yeah.
Well, and we talked about this in our episode that, like, it doesn't seem likely that there is a person who could handle it as well as Groucho did, and, you know, wouldn't really work in today's time. And, so, you know, obviously we're being proven wrong if there's a second season coming up.
But I think, Mike, the other thing we said was that Steve Harvey would be our guest for who would be best to host this thing, because he's got that ability to play off of the audience well.
Oh, my God.
And that's what this is really about.
He has so much TV. I'm so tired of seeing Steve
Harvey.
Dude,
he's now a judge.
A judge.
He's
Steve
a judge
Harvey.
Now.
What timeline are we in?
Yeah, that's just... Look, I mean, good on the guy. He's making a great career, but a little oversaturated.
Dude, let me tell you what. This is the whole idea of hit it while the pan is hot. You know, like, just stay on it, and because you know your time's coming to an end soon, so get as much as you can and go. And a lot of people say, well, that's selling out. And I'd say that's being smart. Like,
yeah,
get
absolutely.
It
all.
Oh, he's set for life. Absolutely.
All right. What else you got for us, Christian?
Well, this is news. I would consider this news. So I watch a lot of streaming TV, and Pluto TV is one of my favorite apps for streaming things. And, you know, Buzzr has shows on there. Game Show Network has shows on there. So I was poking around. Do you know that there's a Chilean game show channel on Pluto TV?
I had no idea.
Wow. Is it as good as the Chilean wine? Because I'm a big fan of Chilean wine. I got to be honest with you.
More research is needed on that. But but so there's a show, and this show has aired in a bunch of different countries, Chile being one of them. It's called Boom. I don't know if you guys have ever seen Boom. It was on Fox for like a season. Really cool show. So Boom, you get a question with like 8 answers, and a bomb rises up from the center of the stage. And you and your team have to cut the wires of the wrong answers. And if you cut the wrong one, it explodes and you lose. The notable thing about this show is that the one in Spain in particular, there was a team of like 3 trivia brains, you know, who were on the show and won for 505 consecutive episodes.
Wow.
They were on this show for years. Because
I was
going to
say, that's like
as
years.
As long as you can keep answering, you know, you win. So over 500 episodes, won 7 million euros altogether, which in U.S. dollars is about 7.9 million.
I mean, has that got to be some sort of record for game show winning? So, like, worldwide, maybe.
I would say in terms of endurance has to be a record. I don't think anyone has lasted longer than that. There was one exception. There was one show in Australia where it was a simple kind of game where like 2 people answer questions and you just have to defeat the other player, where this one guy was on for like 7 years. And he eventually became some like notable Australian politician, like based on his notoriety from this show. But I just thought it was really cool. I'm always down for seeing new game show content, stuff I haven't seen before.
I guess the thing that would interest me is when it blows up, like, does it, like, what's the special effect? I mean, my thing is if you filled it with, like, cream from a pie and they would get, like, saturated, I would be like, yes!
Well, I don't know that it's that. I know that when they did the show on Fox, one of the behind-the-scenes sort of notes on it was that the set consisted of over 1 million LEDs.
Wow.
So it must have been some insane production.
Hmm. I just love to know what the explosion looks like. That's all I really care about.
Well, I say, you know, based on, you know, current trajectory of the human race, I say about 50 years, that show's going to come back, but with a real bomb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's happening. I mean, if you watch The Running Man, I mean, all those games, you know?
Which reminds me, I think we've talked about this. I don't know about on air, but there's that show Release the Hounds. Have you seen this?
No.
You've talked about this before. I don't know if it's been on an episode.
Right.
Though, Mike, go ahead.
Like, people literally have to run down a field and climb over a fence while being chased by dogs. It's the most bizarre game show I've ever seen.
Which is not unlike the one in The Running Man, where the guy's like climbing up the pole getting money and the dogs are trying to bite him from below.
It's very much a Running Man sort of game show. Now, it's been a long time since I saw this. My memories of it are hazy. I only saw like two episodes of it a long time ago, so I want to go back and do some more research and rewatch it and talk about this show more at some point in the future. But yeah, Release the Hounds is just a bonkers game show, and again, that is it's about as close as we get to real bombs on game shows.
I love it. I totally love it. All right, Christian, what about this week in game show history?
All right, this week in game show history is going to be a personal favorite of mine. So we're going back to December 23rd, 1974. And I know that I've mentioned this show maybe in passing on previous episodes of the podcast, but this is the premiere date of one of my favorite obscure 70s game shows. This was on ABC, and this was called The Money Maze.
Mm.
So The Money Maze featured two married couples, and they would compete against each other in like a sort of question and answer game to earn time to run around in a 50 by 100 foot maze on the studio floor. Now, this maze took the staff 2 days to construct for each taping day and another day and a half to tear it down. So doing a week's worth of shows took a literal week. And eventually, that's why the show got canceled, because it was so expensive. One of the producers joked one time that the stagehands took home more money than the contestants did on The Money Maze. But it was just an incredible spectacle of a show. It was hosted by Nick Clooney. So it's George's father, Rosemary's husband, and or Rosemary's brother. I don't know, whatever. Anyways, George Clooney's father.
Rosemary's baby.
Rosemary's baby. How could I forget?
It's the brother of Rosemary Clooney and the father of George Clooney.
That's what I'm... Okay, yeah. So Nick Clooney at this point was a pretty successful broadcaster in the Midwest and got this opportunity to host this show. It lasted for about 8 months or so up into 1975. And, you know, it was just... You know, you don't see the show anymore because all the tapes are erased. There's one episode at some museum in New York where you could watch it, but it's words don't do justice to how incredible this show was and how incredible the show looked. It was just like so exciting, and the audience sat around the maze so you can like reach over and like yell and cheer for the contestants as they're running around, and it was just an incredible show at the time that it premiered. It got terrible reviews. I think TV Guide called it the downfall of Western civilization.
Wow.
Because it was literally people running around for money in a maze like rats. But in hindsight, it was just... That, to me, is like the perfect example of like mid-70s game shows. Just like throw it against the wall and see what sticks. And it was just beautiful. And I hope it comes back. It was supposed to come back in France at some point within the last 10 years. But you know, but it never did. But it just lives on in our memories this week in game show history.
You would think, because of the way technology is nowadays, that they could do something easier and better with a set. That they could, you know, fix it up better than that. You know what I'm saying? That it would like take less to change. Like if you had just a bunch of walls that were on a maze and you could literally press a button and they could all like turn.
Put them on casters or something.
Yeah, you could reset the maze immediately. You know, like I just feel like with technology, you could do it.
I mean, look, if they can do freaking Holy Moly, you know, they can do this.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I remember talking about this show in the past, and I love stuff like this. These really... I mean, to be snobbish with a word, quixotic game shows that like have these like huge lofty goals of what they can be, and like this and Funhouse and like Finders Keepers, just these huge spectacle game shows are always so fascinating to me.
See, to me, they're now getting to the point of overdone. And what I mean by that is, like, you look at the sets for, like, American Ninja Warrior and Holy Moly and all these other big ones. And they've just gotten, like, how big can we go? Like, what's the show out there called The Big Show or whatever it is, where the guys are doing, like, really gigantic stunts that are, like, deadly in order to win prizes? Like, America's Got Talent, but, like, bigger
but for,
or
like,
whatever
stunt
it
men
is.
Or whatever?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. Is it just called The Big Show?
I think it's just The Big Show. But I mean, like, then there was also the show Don't, which was literally filmed in a gigantic studio. I mean, a gigantic studio. And for one season, and it's gone. You know, I mean,
right.
I don't know. I don't know if it's getting overplayed. I don't know if that's what my feeling is, but I just kind of feel like we've lost that grandeur. Back in those days, it was so grand
that's
and so amazing. And nowadays, it's kind of like, meh.
Yeah. And I mean, to echo that, note how all my examples earlier were from ages ago. So.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, the other thing is we also look at it by age, because when we're younger, things look a lot bigger.
They feel a lot bigger.
Absolutely. So who knows? We could just be full of crap. Well, we are normally, yeah. Let's be honest.
Romanticizing.
All right.
Let's say that.
It's time now for Stump or Chump. Christian, how are you feeling?
I was under the impression we had discontinued this segment, but I will do my best. Here we go.
Okay.
This
Get
segment.
Get ready, America.
There will be segments discontinued. Stump or Chump will not be one of them. This is the only part of the show people care about.
Yes, and we love when you get diarrhea, to be honest with us. Okay, Michael.
All right, so I did not do the full research to say that this is the only to say that this is the only case of this. So I wanted to ask what was the only Survivor season, but I couldn't actually confirm it was only. So I'm going to say the first Survivor season to be improperly named. In other words, the name of the season title is not actually where the show took place.
Oh, I don't know this one.
I enjoy your enthusiasm, though.
Oh, man, that may make two of us. Oh, my God, there were so many Survivor seasons.
Yeah, there are. 41 of them.
Yeah, we are at 41 right now, or we're going into 41 next.
Why no? So, like, wait a second. So my initial thought was, you know how they do those, like, you know, like the series veterans versus, like, the new players or something? Like, you know.
Yeah. It's like old versus new. Or
heroes
versus blankety blanks. Yeah.
And at first I thought it was that. But now I'm remembering that the first season of Survivor was just called Survivor. It took place in Palau, but that wasn't in the title. Until,
you're right. It wasn't,
like,
Survivor Palau. Right.
So that's going to be my guess. I'm going to say season one.
I'll give that to you because you're not wrong. But I was more going for it did specifically say a location and it was not in that location, as opposed to simply not mentioning the location.
So in other words, it would be like Survivor Marquesas, but it wasn't in Marquesas.
Exactly. Now here is an additional little clarifier / hint that I will give you. They went too specific in the title. They could have gone less specific and been accurate.
Well, in that case,
he's going to know it. I know he's going to know it. How does he always know it?
Guys, I don't have a clue.
Oh, we got him.
Every time I get stumped, it's on a show that I don't even think is a game show.
Well, that's the angle we're going for.
On, like, Iron Chef last time?
Yep. We're just trying to get you on those fringe shows, bro. That's the whole point. It's the only way we can get you is on the fringe shows.
Well, that's my second New Year's resolution is to brush up on my fringe television.
Well, you know, and it's funny enough, but we do actually have a discussion, and you'll hear it later on in the podcast for the folks out there, about whether or not this truly is a game show. It's kind of been our ongoing running theme from the get-go of this show. Is Survivor a game show? Mm-hmm. And you'll get to hear our opinions on that. But Christian, let's talk a little bit about Survivor. Obviously, a huge show in terms of television. What's your thought on it?
Should I give the answer to the question, or are we just going to let everybody hang?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Mike. What do you got? You're just happy we got them.
Yeah, right? No, I'm sorry. The correct answer is season two. It's called Survivor, the Australian Outback, and in fact was not in the, what is officially referred to as the Outback. It was in a more tropical locale, not the open, arid desert Outback. So had they just called it Survivor Australia, it would have been accurate, but they chose to narrow in on the Outback, where it, in fact, did not actually take place.
There it is.
I like that question because you also have to know geography. That was a good one.
Well, it seems like we can only stump them on the fringe stuff, but that's fine. Hey. All right, Christian, let's talk. What do you got for Survivor?
Yeah, I remember being fascinated with Survivor like during the first season, and I liked it as it went on. I just sort of, as I got older, fell out of touch with it. But I remember being just like completely fascinated with the first season. You know, the casting and the way that they would, you know, combine characters and kind of, you know, document that interplay between, you know, just like these conflicting sort of characters. I remember when it started to, like in the news, they started talking about who was going to win Survivor. And I remember CBS on their website or some, like on like one of their servers or something, they planted a bunch of photos of the cast with X's through their faces. And they had like 8 different photos. And each photo had every cast member crossed out except for one. And I remember that that's how they sort of combated the idea that it might leak, that like that information, because it was really like the most anticipated season finale of any TV show, let alone game show, like for that, like, you know, 2-year period. It was just so captivating. And again, you know, it's I think the idea has been done to a varying degrees of creativity since then. I think a lot of other shows do a better job with the reality format, but definitely the genesis of a lot of what we see on TV now, eliminations and alliances and immunities and, you know, all those things, started with Survivor.
Yeah, no, I Christian, I couldn't agree more. And again, Mike and I will share our feelings a little bit later on our thoughts on the game. But yeah, it established just the real reality of television. And it also, it was the first time that we finally decided that producers have a play in reality, and reality is more fake than it is real. And so reality shows aren't as real as we would like them to be.
For better or worse, right?
Well, I think that's exactly right. I don't know. You know, my whole thing is don't call it a reality show if it's being pre-planned, but it is. They're creating drama, and they're in the way they film and shoot things, and that's just the way it goes. And that, I think that upsets Mike and I probably more than anything else when it comes to a lot of this reality stuff. Not that I'm speaking for you, Mike, but
no, I mean, I upset is a strong word, but I agree.
Yeah. All right, Christian, how about a plug for BuzzerBlog?
Of course, BuzzerBlog.com, the number one game show website in the world, whether you're looking for information on new series, returning series, even You Bet Your Life with Jay Leno for some reason. BuzzerBlog.com is the place to go. That's B-U-Z and so on. BuzzerBlog.com.
I'm going to go see if Buzz and so on is a website.
Thank you so much, Christian. We'll see you next week.
See you next week. Thanks, guys.
And once again, if you would like to submit for Stump or Chump, please do so by dropping us a line via the website, tellthemwhatthey'vewon.com, or hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. We'd be happy to coordinate a question coming through those devices or social platforms. Mike, we've got Survivor this week, and it's kind of fitting that we're doing this at the very end of Season 3. You and I have talked about how there will be some new and exciting stuff we're going to do in Season 4. So it's kind of the end of the featured shows. And it's also the very first show we ever discussed on our first episode with Family Feud.
It's very true. So is, you know, it was unavoidable that Survivor was going to be done. And I do agree that it's fitting that it's going to be the last of our like featured show formats, because it really is the seed that began this podcast, right, was a discussion of whether or not Survivor counts as a game show. And I think, like we even said, like that was our through line before we even plotted the rest of the podcast. So yeah, since day one, this has been on our radar, and I've been dreading it the entire time. but I will say, the show did not win me over, but much like American Idol, I was fascinated while researching it.
It is clearly it was one of the biggest influencers of a lot of things that came afterwards. And again, a lot like American Idol. And so therefore, I kind of feel like it is part of our vernacular. Getting voted off the island mm-hmm. is a slang phrase that we use time and time again in all walks of life.
Yeah, there's no denying the impact of this show, and we'll talk about it in the history. We thought American Idol did well.
And we did. All right, coming up next, we're going to do the gameplay of the reality competition show Survivor. Take us out, Mike.
You've been listening to America's favorite game show podcast. Tell them what they've won.
There it is, the intro to Survivor. This is America's favorite game show podcast. Tell them what they've won, and it is our featured show this week. Mike Jacobs, how about some gameplay for Survivor?
Indeed, gameplay there is. And what's interesting is didn't really talk much about the, what do they call it, alliance aspect of it, the social aspect of this game. So we can talk about that a little bit too, but I don't have that specifically called out in the gameplay. But the game is going to begin with a pool of at least 16 players. This is a thing that shifts throughout the seasons, by the way, as many things do in many of our shows, so mileage may vary. But you start with at least 16 players, and then they're broken up into two tribes. Sometimes there are more, again, depending on the season. And then these two tribes are taken to a remote location, usually a tropical climate, which, they're not going to put them in the middle of, like, the tundra. And then these people are forced to live as they can, right? They have to supply their own food. They have to supply their own shelter. They have very meager supplies. They're not theoretically being provided with anything by the crew and production crew. And they have to survive on this, remote island location for 39 days. Again, varies from season to season, the specific amount of time. Over this time, they are presented with a series of challenges that they compete in. For these challenges, think the same sort of thing you would see in any sort of, physical-based television show. There's races, relays, a lot of puzzle-based things, skill games, that sort of things. And they're always sort of themed around the idea of survival in an isolated location and right. often bringing in elements of the local, culture. And the idea of these challenges is that they are awarding the winning tribe certain perks, potentially more food, what they refer to as luxury items, which of course we would think of as a Cartier watch, but really is like a pillow or, one of the guy got a hacky sack. So it may even just be a thing to do, right? Because you have nothing when you're out there.
Right.
And sometimes even prizes. A common thing that comes up is what they refer to now as the car curse, which is that every single person on Survivor who has won a car has not won the season that they are in. So, yeah, if you're on Survivor and you get a car, you're like, I guess I might as well just quit now.
Well, I mean, a lot of that has to do with the whole voting, which we'll talk about. And, a lot of people, if you're voting against, or if you're voting for someone who's won a car already or someone who's won nothing.
Right. You're like, hey, probably, you can get out of here. You got a car. Deal with it.
Exactly right. And there's a little bit of jealousy. Like, you got the car and I didn't? Yeah. I don't think I'm voting for you. But, I mean, we'll get to go ahead and keep going because the voting's coming.
Indeed. Okay. So the biggest perk of this challenge, though, is the immunity in that the losing team goes to what they refer to as the tribal council, which is, just like a ceremonial thing that they set up to make it look like this ancient ritual. And the team votes off a player. Theoretically, the idea is you vote off the weakest player and make your team stronger, but people also will vote for, like you say, maybe the person that won the car or the person that they're jealous of or the person that they think is most likely to win and therefore making it easier for them to win. There are many, many, many different reasons why you would vote for a person, and that's where what I was talking about before, the idea of alliances and sort of teamwork or team not work really comes into play in this game.
It was very interesting because in the first season, the one that Richard Hatch won, and it's probably one of the, I think I watched the tail end of that season and the next maybe one or two with my father back in the day. Mm-hmm. My dad loved it. This is when his health was declining and he just loved watching Survivor. And when I was watching it, you figured out real quick that Richard Hatch understood the whole idea of the game, which is, it's in the logo. It's outwit, outplay, outlast.
Yep.
Maybe not necessarily in that order. But there's an outwit part to this. And Richard Hatch got it the first season right away. And a lot of the other people did not. From that point on, the game changed because people started really like, well, I'll buddy up with you and I'll buddy up with you and I'll do this and I'll go there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I'm going to do this to annoy this person. And it became this whole thing of outwitting instead of like outplaying or outlasting, you know?
Yes, very much so. And put a pin in Richard Hatch because he will be coming back later.
Oh, I'm sure he will. Go ahead.
Okay, so this is the idea, right? Every round someone's eliminated. They're off and we are now one less contestant in the pool. But watch out because at the halfway point, the tribes are going to be merged. And so now everyone is working together, but they're also competing against each other one-on-one. And so we've completely ruined the established team dynamics, right? And by ruined, I mean in the terms of gameplay. Like, obviously nothing is ruined, correct, ruined, but it throws things off. The alliances that were once there are, you know, no longer necessarily fair game. Anything goes at this point, kind of, right? And the big sort of shift in gameplay is that for these challenges after this halfway point, immunity is granted to single players instead of teams, right? They're all one big team. So the idea is once they go to this tribal council and they have to vote someone off, they're
every man for himself.
Every man for himself, but the person who won the challenge cannot be voted off. They are safe no matter what happens.
Right.
And apparently, I didn't realize this was a thing, but they at some point will change the burden of voting. It's no longer the players who are active in the game, but players who have been eliminated will form a jury for who vote or to place the votes of who stays and who goes.
And you know, the funny thing is, I don't remember that. I want to say it's at that time when the tribes merge is when they bring everybody back to start voting people.
Yes,
off.
I believe that is correct.
I don't know because I haven't seen it in so long. I just don't know.
Right. I think the idea there, the implication there is that, you know, watch out who you cross in the first half of the game because they're coming back and now your fate is in their hands, right? So you got to play the game. Sorry, you have to play the meta game right where you are benefiting yourself, but not to a degree that you are alienating the other players and making them mad at you and want to come back for revenge, right?
And that's got to be such a delicate balance. You know, I've read that there's only been two people that have had perfect seasons where they've never had one vote cast against them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, how you manipulated that that's mastery. I mean, wow.
Yeah. I mean, well done. And that is ultimately like the metagame here. That's what you're playing, right? As much as these challenges and stuff matter, at the end of the day, it's all about the voting and it's all about how you play that social interaction. So where are we? We are, the jury is eliminating players now at this point. And once the pool is reduced to about two or three players, again, depending on the season, we have a final tribal council is, the final tribal council is held, and each contestant has their opportunity to sort of plead their case to the jury and explain why they should win or, more importantly, why others should lose, which seems to be sort of the trend here is not necessarily like I deserve to win, but it's that this person deserves to lose. That's a lot of what the sort of cases being pled are. And then the jury then votes on who the final winner will be. Winning votes are placed in an urn. And then, all right, so this is ridiculous. I didn't realize this was a thing. It is depicted as if the host, Jeff Probst,
I know where you're going,
himself takes this urn from the Survivor competition to the live finale show in New York. He himself is delivering this urn as if it were one seamless event. Obviously this is ridiculous and nobody thinks this is real, but this is how I actually sat down and did some math for this. As we've said, math is not my strong suit, so take this all with a grain of salt. But here's the deal. The one I read about was as if after the episode that was in the Amazon rainforest, he hopped on a jet ski and jet skied the urn to New York City for the finale. The Amazon rainforest is approximately 3,700 miles from New York City, a little bit more than that, and a jet ski goes anywhere between 40 to 70 miles an hour. So, averaging 50 miles an hour speed, it would take Jeff over 3 days to jet ski, 3 days nonstop traveling at 50 miles an hour to get from the Amazon rainforest to New York City.
Well, I mean, obviously this is not happening. I mean,
I know. It's just when I read that, I was like, really? Like, what is the logistics of that happening? Eventually, though, they did give that the axe. That bit ended. The reason why it ended was because they wanted to do one where he skateboarded the urn to the finale, and they needed him to do a skateboard trick. And apparently, despite much training, he never learned how to actually do it. So they were just like, you know what? Let's just scrap the whole thing. In my opinion, probably the right move.
I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm not a huge Jeff Probst fan. I think he does a great job on the show, but I'm not a giant fan of his. But I will say this. If they want to put a little cheese in there, yeah, go for it.
It just feels, I mean, I guess, like, why not? It's cheese ball. But it just feels out of place with the weightiness that the rest of the show claims to have, you know?
I guess. I mean, but see, that's the other thing. It depends on what you consider. I mean, is it real weightiness?
No,
I mean,
not
it's
at
real
all.
Pettiness to me.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely. But yeah. I feel like it's being presented in a way that, I don't know. But anyways, I just thought that was the mental image of Jeff Probst jet skiing at 50 miles an hour nonstop for 3 days is a pretty funny one in my mind.
Yeah, and you know, I don't get it either, because like Mark Burnett is like notorious like about being so particular that all of this is like exactly done perfectly. And then there's that at the end. And I'm like, what happened?
Yeah.
Like, he shut down his... Oh, well, it doesn't matter now. You just take the votes to New York. We're fine.
So, yeah, they do a final live reveal of the winner in front of a audience. And the winning player gets a cool $1 million. But guess what, Tom? We get what? Consolation prizes.
I know. I found out that they pay down. It's so great.
Every contestant gets paid. You are paid based on how long you are on the show, starting at $2,500. So that's not bad, right? Like, if you're first eliminated, you basically just got $2,500 to go on vacation for a couple days.
Well, and it's more than a couple of days, because what happens is everybody goes to what they call Ponderosa, and that is the like resort that they send you to once you're voted off. And you wait there until everybody else is done. So if you're voted off on day, you're voted off on day three, let's say, because the average, I think it's like one vote every like 2 to 3 days. If you're voted off on like day three, so you're like the first one gone, you had to suffer 3 days without any food or water or whatever, you know, rice or some crap, you know. And now you get to go eat and drink whatever the heck you want for the next 36 while you're waiting for everybody else to finish up.
Living large at a resort. That sounds great.
Plus $2,500, have a nice day. Plus, you know, the second place prize is $100,000. That ain't, and third place is $85,000. That's not bad.
Right? Yeah. Plus, like I said earlier, there are prizes to be won, like legitimate prizes, not just hacky sacks and pillows. There are legitimate prizes to be won throughout. So, you know, it's a lucrative game for sure. And then, so yeah, after the winner is announced, after they didn't do this the first season, starting with season two, they do a reunion show where they bring everybody together and have a little chit chat, of course, hosted by Probst. One of them was hosted by Rosie O'Donnell for some reason. Didn't really find much information about that, but she came in, I think, on season four.
Okay.
But yeah, so there you go. That's the gameplay. Like you said, what was it? Outlive, outstretch, outfart, something like that?
Yeah, exactly right. Outbathe, out... The funny thing is, I found out they only get one pair of underwear, really, for the most part.
Oh,
the
really?
The entire time.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about nudity in the history, too. That's a hot-button issue on the show.
Hot-button issue on the show. Well, you know, the other thing is that we should also talk about the casting of this, Mike. And I don't know, do you touch on that at all in the history?
No, I do not.
They cast a lot of actors and a lot of models for this one because they want it to look good. And
yes.
Like I've read a lot of behind the scenes stuff where a lot of contestants have said, well, you know, you pick out your wardrobe as to what you're going to wear. You know, they give you the Survivor head wraps and body wraps and things. And like the stuff that was picked for one gal, she's like, it's a little more risque than I would have ever picked myself. But I was like, well, whatever. As long as I get to bring my hat, I'm fine. Like I was like, okay, so they're basically just making it like a bunch of sexy people on an island barely dressed, you know? And I'm like, all right. Well, whatever the qualifications are. Again, Mark Burnett has put together an incredible production, and we'll talk about just how incredible when we come back next.
Indeed. You've been listening to America's favorite game show podcast. Tell them what they've won.
And welcome back. It's America's favorite game show podcast. Tell them what they've won. I'm Tom Bastick, alongside of me, Mike Jacobs. Mike, episode 59, segment 3.
Yes, indeed, the history. And as with many game shows, the seed of this show is planted well before we actually see it. So this is derived from a Swedish television series called Expedition Robinson, which I assume has to be a play on Swiss Family Robinson.
Robinson, yeah, I would assume, yeah.
Created by a gentleman named Charlie Parsons, and that began in 1997. But here's the deal. Charlie Parsons actually had this idea even before then and had trouble getting it picked up. He was shopping it around, and that's why it ended up on Swedish television, because he just had to find whoever could produce it. So if I recall correctly, the like sort of genesis of this idea started in 95. But we don't actually see the American series that we know and love and are discussing today until May 31st, 2000. It premiered on CBS, hosted, of course, by Jeff Probst, who we talked about earlier. And he is the executive producer of the show, along with the, as you said, Mark Burnett, the American producer and, I guess you could say, creator of the American show. And Charlie Parsons, of course, as the original creator, also brought in as executive producer. When we talked about American Idol, we mentioned that at the sort of height of their popularity, they were averaging 30,000 viewers per episode.
30 million.
I'm sorry, yes, 30 million viewers per episode, thereabouts. The season one finale of Survivor, over 56 million viewers.
Whoa!
Yeah, so almost double what American Idol is doing on its best day. Right?
Oh,
so,
wow.
I mean, just absolute phenomenon, this show. Problem is, American Idol held that sort of number, average.
They, for a while, yeah.
Survivor did not. If you look at the ratings, every season is a little bit less than the one before. It is a very clear and steady decline over the next few seasons. Seasons like 2 through 4 to 5 or so, it settles kind of around the 25 million mark, you know, starts at around 28, 27, and then goes down to maybe 20. But after that, man, like it's just a steady decline. Now, that being said, with the same deal as American Idol, we are talking about massive numbers of people here. So a steady decline. I think the last season was at 9 million. That's still pretty darn good. And in fact, Survivor, for the first 23 seasons, was consistently in the top 20 most watched television shows. Now, that is not 23 years. Obviously, as we said, it debuted in 2000, and we're only in 2021. At some point, I've forgotten where, but we'll come back to that. I've got it noted here somewhere. They start doing 2 seasons per season, which sounds weird, but each television season, you know, they had 2 contests of Survivor. So that's why there are so many of them.
Yeah, it doesn't run like with a regular calendar year like most shows did back in the day. Although, in all fairness, there's a lot of shows that do the same thing.
Yes. No, this is not necessarily uncommon. It's just that, we at a certain point, we start to see twice as many seasons of Survivor as there are seasons of, television. So that's why that number starts to get off. But after the 23rd season, they have not broken the top 20 since. Like I say, this slow and steady decline has just been a staple element of the show. Season 19, by the way, the next line, is when they started doing two seasons at once. So you got a good four seasons in before they break out of that top 20 most watched shows. And like I say, once they make that slip, it never comes back. For the first 33 seasons, it's moved to a new location. And like I said earlier, the games and presentation of the show are themed around the local indigenous culture. But beginning with season 33, they moved to the, I don't know how to pronounce this,
Mamanuka.
Okay, there you go. Islands in Fiji. And they have stayed there ever since. As we mentioned with Amazing Race, obviously stuff happens, and there have been seasons which have had sort of turmoil because of local
weather,
political upheaval, and weather, and all that kind of stuff. And the other thing is, once you move around 33 times, you start to run out of remote tropical locations, right? Like I said, they're not going into the tundra, and they're not in cities, so. Eventually, you're going to run out of places to go. So I think they just sort of settled on Fiji as their kind of not permanent, but indefinite location.
Sure.
So over the years, they've been nominated for countless Emmys. And I say countless because I literally lost count three times and I just gave up. I was like, you know what? I'm not starting this over again. But of those countless times, they've only won seven Emmys. Now to say only won seven is kind of absurd because, winning one Emmy is an incredible accomplishment. But looking at the list, it very much looks like a ever the bridesmaid, never the bride sort of situation, right? Where it's like they keep getting nominated, but they just keep not winning. But it is still going, quote unquote, strong today, strong enough to keep going. Like I said, viewership is in the average of 9 million. Season 41 is running now, and season 42 is planned for next year. So it's not going anywhere. It's doing well enough to keep running. So as it sort of goes without saying that with 42 seasons of a television show, you are going to get some merchandising, all sorts of, clothing and apparel and outdoor gear and things like that.
Oh, hell yeah.
Most of the stuff was not necessarily worth talking about, but there were two specific things I wanted to bring up. One was there's a 2001 computer game, which was apparently awful. I did not find a single good review of it. In fact, some of the websites, the video game websites, it received their lowest score ever. And one review said that it was, quote, as fun as being buried alive, which is like people say as fun as being watching paint dry, but at least being buried alive. I mean, at least paint dry doesn't
fill you
with the fear of being buried alive. And then there's also the DVDs, which I guess makes sense in the fact that you're releasing a TV show on DVD. But with apologies to anyone who has bought them. Who the hell buys Survivor on DVD? Are there people constantly re-watching old Survivor episodes? Is it show for some people, like The Office?
I don't know. I mean, I knew somebody that used to watch the Intervention show because it made them feel good about their own life.
So I will say that is true for both Intervention and Hoarders for me, especially Hoarders, because as a collector, I feel like I'm often on the border of being a hoarder. But you don't re-watch them, right? Like, it's not a binge show. It's just every once in a while. At least it is for me. I feel like a lot of the appeal of Survivor is watching that social interplay, seeing how it plays out, and the suspense of who's going to win it and how it's going to go down and all that kind of stuff. What is the appeal of rewatching things like this?
I don't know. I mean, you could also ask me why I've watched Star Trek The Next Generation literally 100 times.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the same thing. Like, I've watched Always Sunny, I've watched The Office, all those shows so many times.
Yeah.
But there's something, I don't know.
It's just not, again, like with American Idol, where it's meant for the masses, not the Mike Jacobs and the Tom Bastics of the world. These DVDs are just not made for the Mike Jacobs and the Tom Bastics of the world.
Yeah, no, fair enough, fair enough.
Probably most of America, I would think.
I want to know when the last time a disc from season two of you know what, I'm gonna say season three of Survivor, when the last time a disc of season three of Survivor hit a DVD player and was watched.
I don't know.
By anyone in the world.
I don't know. And that wasn't on the show or involved with the show.
Yeah, okay, I'll give you that too, because yeah, I'm sure somebody's like, oh, watch this episode I was on. Anyways, yeah. So like you say, it's not for us, that's fine, but it's not for everybody. Despite the massive popularity of the show, as with American Idol and a lot of other shows we talk about, it is not without its controversies.
Well, I also feel like, Mike, before you go on with this, that every show that makes it really, really big always has its detractors.
100%.
Go ahead.
Well, and that's why I'm skipping over most of them. There's several lawsuits and complaints and claims like that of interference from the producers, or, you know, questions that were answered correctly but deemed incorrect, or, you know, just the outcome of the game was somehow altered through a fault of the game itself, right?
Sure.
It seems that most of those were sort of handled, you know, personally, out of court, whatever. Like with the question that should have been right but wasn't, they just paid the guy off. Things like that. They're not really all that interesting. And like you say, it's just when a show goes for 44 seasons, it's going to happen. But there was some stuff that came up that I thought was at least interesting enough to talk about, even if we don't necessarily want to take a side on it one way or another. As I mentioned earlier, Richard Hatch coming back. You brought him up as the winner from season one. He is indeed.
Correct.
He was also known as being a nudist. He was very often nude on the show. And at one point, rubbed up against a female contestant while nude, against her will, during a immunity challenge. It upset her to the point that she eventually quit the show because of it. She declined to, you know, pursue any legal action because she said that CBS, I guess, counseled her and helped out. I suspect there was probably some money involved as well. I don't know for sure, and I don't want to try and weigh in on a sensitive subject like that. But suffice it to say that they handled the matter without legal action. That's not really the only instance of sort of, I don't want to say sexual misconduct, because that makes it sound like full on like rape or assault, and that has not been the case, but just unwanted contact, right?
Sure.
Specifically from the people who are nudists. But don't worry, because as of the 41st season, they took care of that, so that's no longer a problem. It only took them until this year to deal with a problem that came up on the first season.
What did they do? Did they say you can't be nude anymore? Is that like the deal?
Well, you cannot be nude anymore, but not because of this. the not being nude actually happened before. We'll come to that in a second.
Okay.
I don't know all the details of the unwanted touchings and misconduct, but I did want to weigh in and say that if it came up in the first season and it took them 20 years to do anything about it, I'm not exactly confident that whatever stricter rules they have in place are going to do much.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe they were finally pushed to the limit or whatever to do this. I don't know why. The fact is the straw that should have broke the camel's back should have been the first straw, not the 41st straw.
Right, I mean, right. That's my point. Yes.
Yeah.
As far as not allowing nudity anymore, like I said, Richard was not the only nudist. We have a contestant by the name of Marcus Lehman, Lehman. He was on Survivor Gabon. He was also a nudist, and one time his Paul and Mary's made it to air uncensored.
Oh,
whoops, got by the editor on that one. And that's when they pulled the plug on nudity, by the way, was when it made it to air, not when a man rubbed his junk on a lady. But, oh, it's on TV now. We can't have that. So, yeah.
Jeez. All right. Well, not everybody is woke when it comes to doing the right thing.
Well, and, at the risk of editorializing. Wait, what do I mean at the risk of? We already have. And said exactly what I was about to say. Again, the fact that it took 41 seasons to do something about this feels a little weird to me.
Correct.
Anyways, back to Richard Hatch. That was not his only hiccup. He was later convicted of tax evasion because he did not report his winnings from the show. He went to jail for over 4 years for it.
Yep, and then went back to jail for 9 more for not amending those tax returns.
Oh, my God. And that's the thing. Like, when you won a television show that was watched by 56 million people, dude. We all know you got that money. How are you going to avoid paying taxes on it?
Yeah. And then the sad part is then after you get out of jail 4 years later, I can't believe it's 4 years, but 4 years he gets for that, mm-hmm. comes back out of jail and then doesn't amend his tax return and does another 9 months in jail because of that.
I mean,
Hello, stupidity.
Yeah.
Hello, stupidity.
Which makes me wonder how he won. Like, how did he play that social game well enough?
The way he played that social game, the way he won it, was the nudity was a part of it. I don't know how much of an active nudist he really was. And for that matter, I don't know if Mr. Marcus Lehman was either. He used that to, like, scare people off, essentially.
Yeah.
Like, oh, there's Richard walking around naked again. Ugh. You know, and that was the idea was that he made people as uncomfortable as possible. And he played that to his advantage. The man knew what he was doing. I mean, to win the game, at least. Now, I don't say he knew what he was doing rubbing up against a woman. I mean, he is a gay man. So I don't know if there was any, sexual intention there as much as it was an uncomfortable intention. You
yes.
know what I'm saying?
I don't know. It was during a challenge, so they were, physically engaged with one another outside of the fact that there was nudity, right? Like, it doesn't feel like it was straight up like, oh, I'm going to go grind on this lady. But I think you're absolutely right that he makes the choice to be a nudist on the show specifically because he knows other people are uncomfortable with it, and that gives him an advantage.
It's the way that goes, man. He's playing the game. Playing the game.
And then the last note that I have is kind of going back to what you were mentioning before about the casting and whatnot of just trying to get beautiful people in skimpy clothes. They did get some accusations and backlash for not having a diverse enough contestant pool. So their reaction to this was for Survivor Cook Islands, they sorted the tribes by race.
Oh, boy.
Right? That's the way to go. Look how diverse we are. Here's all the black people together. Like, what? Yeah. I think it's safe to say that television executives don't get it.
No, they really don't. And it's sad because with everything that's going on in the world with social issues like this, how they don't get it, I'll have no idea.
Yeah, it's disappointing.
Oh, boy.
Well, so there, let's with the word disappointing, let's go to our final thoughts on the show.
I will say this. It has a certain place in my heart, Mike, because it was while my dad's health was declining before his death that he and I watched this show together. Hmm. And it was one of the shows that he really, really enjoyed. And I got into it because, like a lot of shows, you get involved with the characters, and then you're kind of curious to see how it does work out. You know what I'm saying? So
yes.
I definitely see what the appeal is. And Lord knows that 9 million people out there watching this thing, which is probably low, to be honest. There's probably a lot more than that watching this show still. But I understand why people, dig on it. A lot of folks love the whole let's vote you off the island thing. To me, it is the beginnings of the Big Brothers of the world and all these other shows. And and I have to tell you, I am not a fan of any of those shows. I mean, if you look at The Bachelor, it's essentially I'm voting you off the island by not giving you a rose. You know, I mean, it just all goes in that same kind of aspect. At the same time, I looked at one point in my life, my wife and I had come up with the idea of doing a cruise ship thing. And we looked at trying to get a patent or a copyright or whatever it would be. But you can't copyright an idea for a cruise ship where you would go on board and you would have to work on the cruise ship. So 12 people or 20 people or whatever would start working on board the cruise ship. And then they would, you know, just intermingle with the crew and the everything else. And then whoever got voted off just got left at the next stop. Done. And I thought it would be great. I was like, man, dropping these people off at some remote island in the middle of nowhere, like, see ya, bye. You know,
it's like Cash Cab, way more extreme.
Way more extreme, exactly right.
Instead of having to walk the last three blocks, you got to charter a flight home.
So obviously this has hit home in probably everybody's world at some point. We spoke earlier about this, and I think in segment one where I said, you know, being voted off the island is become a part of life. It's a national, international kind of saying that people use on a regular basis. It's a colloquialism, you know?
Yep.
And it has led to that. The obvious amounts of people that watch this show are amazing, you know, so it definitely affected the history of television. It will definitely be considered, when looked back on the beginning of the 21st century, you will look back and say Survivor and American Idol were two of the biggest things that changed the look of television over the next X amount of years.
Yeah, you could not be more correct. And that's the thing is, you know, Survivor was not the first reality competition show, but it was the first that was such a mainstream success. And that not to say that there were like attempts earlier that were failures, but I'm saying like the things, like I'm talking real world, you know, things that are sort of counterculture. Yeah. MTV is obviously hugely successful and popular, but it's still sort of counterculture to just the American John Q public, right?
Right.
American Idol was the first one that's like John Q public is watching this. And like I said, the season one finale brought in twice the numbers that American Idol brought in, and American Idol literally reshaped other networks. So the importance of this show cannot be overstated. And it's tough to kind of not be a fan of this show in that sense, right? Like I have to basically accept the fact that I am wrong about the show not being good, right? Like as far as evidence is concerned, when other people have the same opinion, that's one thing, but all evidence points to this show being a strong success, right? And like you said, none of the shows that have come after it would be where they are, would exist as they do without this show. I was going to say it's to reality competition shows what Millionaire was to traditional game shows. But it's even more impactful than that, right? Because it's literally like the genesis. It's not a shift, it's the start of a whole new phenomenon.
A whole new genre, actually.
Yep, you know? Exactly. I mean, exactly.
So I guess what it comes down to is we should probably answer the question that we asked in episode number one, Mike.
So this was going to be what I learned this week.
Ah, well, if you'd like to let it wait, but I feel like we should hit it now.
I mean, at this point, I'll just say it. Survivor is a game show.
Well, and here's where my opinion has changed.
Did we flip-flop?
No, we didn't flip-flop, but what I've learned over the past three seasons, the past 60 episodes or 59 episodes, is that game show is a wildly wide-open term.
Very true.
And that it is a genre, it is a category that has subcategories or sub-genres. And in the beginning, I was very stout on there is game shows and there is non-game shows. And you were very much like, this is a non-game show. And that's because I believe that you and I had very different definitions of what game shows were in episode number one.
Yes.
I believe in episode number 59 that both of our views on what game shows are have not just changed but grown.
Agreed.
And I feel that this is a reality competition show, which unfortunately or fortunately, depending on who you are, is a subset of game show.
Yes, I agree. The way I see it is if you look at a, let's say, black to white gradient of, you know, like, let's say Price is Right, the most true game show ever on one end, and Survivor, the most true reality competition show on the other. If you look at one versus the other, one's black, one's right, white, right? But
right.
If you go to each individual part, you don't see where that delineation is made, right? There's a smooth gradient from one to the other. And I think that's what we have here, right? That it's something that if you compare Survivor to The Price is Right, no, they're not the same genre of show. But at the end of the day, Survivor is a game. It is a television show. There are contestants. They're competing for a prize. It's a game show. It's a subgenre of a game show. It's an maybe an offshoot, a spinoff of the game show world. It doesn't, on its surface, look like the rest of the game shows that we think of when we think of game shows. But there is no point where you would say, okay, this is where I will draw the line and say anything past this is not a game show. I don't have that hard line that I used to have.
And again, that's where I think we've grown.
Yeah.
And I think we've also grown ourselves out of time for this week.
Indeed we have, Tom. Another show that we don't like but talked about ad nauseum. So thank you very much for your time. Thank you so much to everyone for listening. Thank you, Christian. Thank you, BuzzerBlog. And thank you to the people who make the Survivor DVDs for keeping alive the dream of watching Survivor on DVD.
At least you know that you can vomit anytime you want, Mike. There you go.
Hey, you know.
All right, well, tune in again next time, guys. We will have episode number 60. It's going to be our big Japanese game show spectacular. It will be many shows as our featured show next week, too.
Yes, indeed. And make sure that you always check us out online. We're going to have a little bit of a break before the next episode, so spend some time checking us out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that fun stuff. Of course, 24 hours a day, tellthemwhatthey've won.com.
Please subscribe, share, like, drop a review if you like what you heard.
And if you didn't like it, I'm voting you off the island.
Off the island. I knew it was coming.
I mean, what else am I going to put there, really?
The tribe has spoken. Thanks so much, Mike.
Thank you. Bye, Tom.
You've been listening to America's favorite game show podcast, Tell Them What They've Won, a JTAC audio production, copyright 2021. No part of this podcast may be reproduced by anyone without the express written consent of the creators. For more information or to contact us, please go to tellthemwhatthey'vewon.com. All right, Mike, what did you learn this week?
Well, like I said, I learned Survivor's a game show. It's I don't think that my viewpoint on game shows has changed so much as it has expanded and now includes things that it used to not. So there you have it.
Yeah. Well, and I would agree that I've definitely learned what a true game show is. It only took me 59 episodes to get there. Not unlike the CBS executives that it took 41 episodes, seasons to figure out the problems they were having and how to get them corrected. But the truth is, what I really did not know about before this week was that they paid down all the way. I knew that there was like a second and third prize, but I'm so glad there's consolation prizes for Survivor all the way down. I wish all the game shows would take a hint from that.
100%. I was floored when I learned that.
See, we found something good at Survivor. Imagine that. Copyright 2021, a JTAC audio production.